Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Overnight America continues. So right now at the Democratic debate, they are wrapping up with a couple of closing statements. Looks like Elizabeth Warren's doing her thing right now.
How gun violence and active shooter drills worry every mother in this country. How children are living in poverty.
All right. So yeah, doing their thing, their prescripted thing right now. So here's who's on the stage. There's only six on stage right now. Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, and Tom Steyer. Now, there's other candidates that are not on the stage there. You have Bloomberg, who's making a lot of buys down in Texas. I don't think he has the poll numbers yet. Andrew Yang, who made it a big announcement that Dave Chappelle's going to endorse him. Dave, the comedian Dave Chappelle. And he's actually going to perform at a couple of different Andrew Yang rallies that are at the end of the month in Iowa as they try to get as many people as they can to vote for him. I don't know how that's going to move the needle. It might, but there's a lot of celebrities coming out. They really like Andrew Yang. Some of them here, there was this article from Fox News. According to People, Chappelle joins other celebrities who support Yang, include Donald Glover. He's an actor and a rapper. Nicolas Cage. Is there anything Nicolas Cage isn't? Weezer's Rivers Cuomo, I don't know who that is. Noah Centineo, don't know who that is. Elon Musk, that's a big name to have on your side. Super big name. And also Jack Dorsey, St. Louis guy, you know, the guy from Twitter. That's kind of cool. There's a lot of big names that are throwing support. Normally the celebrities wait. You don't see a lot of celebrities going out and throwing support this early, but they must really like this Andrew Yang guy. He's accessible. I know people talk to him. I wonder what he's doing tonight, if he's watching these or if he's out there doing his own counter rally for people that may be more interested in him than anyone else. So the people that are on stage have been fighting it out. I'm going to talk to Rich Rubino in a moment. We were going to wait until the end of the debate to bring him on. And since the debate's going long, of course it's going long. It wouldn't be a CNN debate if it didn't go long. We're going to see what they talk about when it comes to impeachment, when it comes to how we handle Iran, how they would handle the different tensions there. Buttigieg needs to look at how to stop from the polling slide that he's seen so far for a while there. He shot up in the polls, but he continues to slip. Klobuchar, what she's going to do to get some sort of attention. There's a lot of people undecided in Iowa right now. You know, how's money going to play a factor? What are they going to do with Bloomberg? I don't know. And then there was that thing between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. So Warren comes out and says, oh, yeah, Bernie told me a woman can't be president. And Sanders came back and pushed pretty hard and said, it's ludicrous. Let me see if I can read this quote, my best Bernie Sanders. It is ludicrous to believe at the same meeting where Elizabeth Warren told me she was going to run for president, I would tell her that a woman could not win. It's pretty good Bernie. I got to say, that might be one of my A-plus Bernie impersonations. Joe Biden doing his thing right now. What do you think he's saying?
Back to the world in order to be able to change things.
All right. Blah, blah, blah. It's exactly what you'd expect for something like that. Oh, yeah. Let me see if I can pull up Joe Biden again real quick and we can get this one.
To do, if we do it together, let's go do it.
Of course, we just got to go do it. That's exactly what I would expect a Joe Biden to say, something like that. We also have one more. Let's pull up Joe Biden one more time.
And by the way, you know, I sit on the stand and it get hot. I got hairy legs that turn blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight, and then watch the hair come back up again. They'd look at it. So I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap.
Ooh.
And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
Yeah, I would have left that out, Joe Biden, from your speech there. Let's get live reaction. Bobo on the line. Hello, Bobo.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I was thinking. Rich Rubino coming up next. Reaction from the Democratic debate. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America. CNN just wrapped up their Democratic debate. Here's their slug on the bottom of the screen. Stakes high after final debate before first votes. Joining us now is someone we hook up with on Mondays. His book is called American Politics on the Rocks. Let's bring in our friend Rich Rubino. Thanks for coming on after the debates.
Oh, you're welcome.
How was it tonight?
This is actually a very informative debate. The first hour basically focused on foreign policy almost specifically, and the second hour basically focused on domestic policy. There weren't any real, any real feuds on this, other than the fact that the question that everyone was asking was, I guess, you know, this kind of little interesting fight between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren telling essentially beforehand that Bernie Sanders had told her in a private meeting that he didn't think that a woman could be elected president. Mm-hmm. They asked Bernie specifically the question during the debate, and he essentially denied that he'd ever made that statement, so nobody really knows whether, you know, he had said this, whether he had not said this. But it's interesting, there was actually an old clip when he was mayor of Burlington, Vermont, when he was actually talking about it, and he said that he thinks a woman should become president someday. Uh-huh. So it's really questionable why he did that. But I thought the most interesting part was he essentially said in this debate that back in 2015, he essentially was going to defer to Elizabeth Warren if Elizabeth Warren, and there was a draft Elizabeth Warren movement, was going to run for president in 2016. And then when she didn't, he essentially decided he was going to enter the race. I guess that would show that, you know, he has confidence in Elizabeth Warren, that he thought she would have been a good president. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that necessarily how that benefits him, but that was, I think, the real headline. And the other headline, I think, was the first question of the debate when they asked the question about Joe Biden again, and the fact that he had supported the resolution for the authorization of the use of force in Iraq, and Bernie Sanders talked about how he had voted against it. And Joe Biden made the same argument that he's always been making, that he wasn't voting for war, but that George W. Bush basically told him that he needed his vote so that they could bring the inspectors back in so that he could essentially have leverage at the United Nations. And that's, of course, an argument that's always the same argument that John Kerry unsuccessfully made in 2004.
So if someone that's a non-political nerd like yourself, or a political geek would probably be the better way to put it, with politi-geek, someone that would just be a casual observer of what was going on, would they look at this debate as boring, or would they look at this debate as something worthwhile?
I actually think this debate they would look at as substantive. As I say, there wasn't a lot of tete-a-tete. There wasn't a lot of back and forth. But I think that you pretty much got to understood where the candidates were on most issues. When it came to health care, you understood that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren support Medicare for all. And you understand that Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Tom Steyer, although he's kind of in the middle there, and Amy Klobuchar all oppose it. But they all say, but all the candidates who oppose Medicare for all say that by expanding the Affordable Care Act and adding a public option, you will get to essentially universal health care. It's just a different way of doing it. And I think it would have been very interesting for anybody, even the casual low propensity voter.
Wow, I wonder how many people watch this, but this is really the last push for them as they're going to be
focusing on Iowa.
And there's a lot for that. Now they do have a couple of debates set up for February. I mean, three of them set up for February, and before it all gets down into it, you know, I'm wondering. You mentioned healthcare. What were some of the big topics that they discussed tonight that may have been topics they overlooked in previous debates?
Not really very many. I mean, there were a few questions about the environment. There really weren't any questions, and I always wonder, you know, about this in debate. And usually, I think the many questions that are asked, they tend to focus on the major issues where the candidates are mostly prepared. I actually think sometimes that if a candidate is to answer a question that's kind of comes out of left field, then you kind of see the way they think, you know, that they're not necessarily being able to go on to their message. I mean, these candidates are very good at staying on message. particularly Joe Biden. You know, he talks about how this is United States of America. He says kind of the same thing. Bernie Sanders, this time he didn't say, I wrote the damn bill. But normally normally he says something to that effect. And Elizabeth Warren can always get her Aunt Bea in there and talk about her personal story and talk about how she, you know, grew up in Oklahoma and how she had three brothers in the military. They kind of always kind of get to that. But I always am interested why they don't ask something, not in a left field, that's something that, you know, nobody was going to care about, but something that would just get the candidates to actually, you know, kind of have to, that they could not use this news, their talking points as much as they do. And I think these six candidates are very skillful. They're pros at bringing their talking points, no matter what the question is, what they want to say, they're going to defer and they're going to divert and they're going to bring it over to that.
So you're saying that Wolf Blitzer didn't say, say the line, Bernie. Say the line. Didn't happen.
I would have loved to have said that. I remember there was one. I remember there was a governor's race in Massachusetts at one time, and one of the moderator asked, "What is your position on the Castle Doctrine?" The Castle Doctrine, which essentially says that, you know, that citizens should have the right to have their guns and defend themselves, their houses, like it was a castle. And I mean, the answers to the questions were very. We're very milquetoast, but I just thought it would be a question like that is kind of interesting because it gets the candidates to kind of gets the candidates a little bit off track. I mean, by the way, talking about staying on message, go back to 1988. Mike Dukakis arguably lost the campaign because the first question of the debate, he did pretty well in the rest of the debate. This is the presidential race between George H.W. Bush and Michael Dukakis. Was if your wife Kitty was irrevocably was raped and murdered, would you support the irrevocable death penalty for the perpetrator? And instead of going in and talking about how awful I would have strangled myself, something that I think most people's general reaction was, he went in to give an intellectual reason why he was opposed to capital punishment. And it made a lot of voters, I think that he was, you know, too technocratic, too intellectual, and it hurt him in that respect.
Yeah. Rich Urbino joining us now. His book, American Politics on the Rocks, politi-geek.com. You can find him on line two and some of the different appearances. I was wondering how all the candidates fared for themselves. So the six candidates on stage, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, and Tom Steyer. Overall, who do you think were the big winners for the night?
I think Elizabeth Warren in a couple respects. First of all, when it came to specific issues of foreign policy, one of the things that differentiates Bernie Sanders from Elizabeth Warren is that Bernie Sanders talks about how he wants to truncate the military budget and he wants to bring the troops home from overseas. Elizabeth Warren, he kind of took the offensive rather than having to answer a question specifically about that. She brought up the issue of how it was time to bring the military to bring combat troops, for example, home, which is something that, you know, Bernie Sanders and I think Tulsi Gabbard and Andrew Yang to a certain degree had brought up. I think she was very sharp in that respect. But I also think Bernie Sanders, I think there really wasn't any, you know, there really wasn't any huge wins and losses in this. I think Bernie Sanders was very good in terms of bringing up his progressive arguments. Basically, voters out of these six candidates, voters basically have a choice: do they want a revolution, or do they want incremental change? They want a revolution is what you get with Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. If one of those two is nominated, of course, in order to get that revolution, you have to really have a groundswell of support in the United States House, the United States Senate. So you have to essentially win both bodies overwhelmingly to get anything they want through. Or do you want more incremental change, which I think the other four candidates are essentially arguing, in particular on the issue of health care. You know, Pete Buttigieg, Joe Biden, and Amy Klobuchar are arguing that we should need that essentially the first step. Maybe you'll get to universal health care. Maybe you'll get to Medicare for all at some point, but you need to have incremental change. And the first one is there to be a public option. But there's a schism between those three. And then Tom Steyer is kind of on the edges because his message is different. He talks about, for example, fixing the broken governmental system. He's the only candidate who actually calls for term limits, which is actually something that's usually a Republican issue. But he's just basically running as kind of an anti-establishment, kind of as being somewhat disassociated from the party system in many respects. He's a little bit of an outlier. But of the other five candidates, of the three moderates, you basically have to choose which one you think is more electable. And of the two on the more liberal side, you basically have to choose which one you would prefer to see go against Donald Trump and how you think Donald Trump would calculate an election versus those candidates.
I'm going to read you a couple of statements, and maybe you can tell me if you agree with these or disagree with them. Here's one statement online. by Tim Young. He's a comedian. Said Amy Klobuchar is America's completely forgettable third grade teacher. So tonight, after watching her presence at the debate, would you agree with that?
No, it's funny because Elizabeth Warren gets that stereotype a lot because she was, you know, she
a lot
of people, because she actually was a special needs teacher. In Amy Klobuchar's case, I actually think that actually kind of can benefit her because, I mean, the fact is, you know, she uses terms like pell-mell. She's from the Midwest. You know, she's from Minnesota. That's actually something her kind of, I think she has kind of a down-home image, and I think that kind of actually, to a certain degree, would benefit her in an election against Donald Trump because it's hard for Donald Trump to caricature her as kind of an Eastern elitist from one side of the country, from, you know, either Elizabeth Warren being from Massachusetts, Bernie Sanders being from Vermont. The fact that she's from Minnesota and the fact that she comes off as, you know, kind of somehow starting and stopping sometimes, I think that can actually probably actually benefit her more than anything else.
Yeah, and there's some people that have pointed out that now Andrew Yang being out, there's no minorities on the stage. I think they've completely wrote off the whole controversy of claiming Native American ancestry.
Yeah, I was just thinking that actually. That, yes, I guess you could make that argument. And I guess, you know, diversity, I guess, is in the eye of the beholder. I guess you could say, you know, where do these people's, you know, I guess, I mean, they're all white, but you could say certainly you have the male female dichotomy, but also the dichotomy of, you know, where did their parents come from? Do they go back to Greek heritage, or Scandinavian heritage, British heritage? I guess if you go back far enough, you know, there are all different types of white people out there.
Yeah. And then we look at this, and tell me if you agree with this. They said the debate would have been more fun if Marianne Williamson was still in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Would you wish she was in this one?
She resigned. She essentially dropped out of the race yesterday, basically. She was in two debates earlier on. The first debate, no one really expected her to be there. No one knew who she was, what was going to happen. And she goes on there and talks about how essentially she says in her closing statement, we're not going to beat Donald Trump with hate. We're going to beat Donald Trump with love. And, of course, the Saturday Night Live folks absolutely loved it, and she became a media sensation. And I'm sure she's going to sell. No matter what happens to her, she's now not only seen as a spiritual figure, but a political figure as well. And, you know, there is a small constituency that believes essentially that she would be that believes essentially what she has talked about from a spiritual sense. You need to get, as opposed to getting it from a political sense, you need to go a step higher. But she's definitely going to enhance her image based on her campaign.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a few other things I want to talk to you about. I want to maybe ask who do you think may be the closest to dropping out? Because there's a few, you know, Klobuchar, Steyer, and even Buttigieg. If you want to look at the bottom three when it comes to polling, he's really slipped. And I think some of them were really trying to make an impact tonight. I want to talk about at least Klobuchar and Steyer. If any of them made an impact tonight, if you think maybe Pete Buttigieg could rise back into the polls after a debate like this, maybe we can do that right after the break.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's Rich Rubino. We hook up with him on Mondays. Happy to have him tonight after the Democratic debate. I think this is the 30th Democratic debate tonight. It feels like the 30th one. CNN was the one hosting it. We'll get a couple of more reactions from Rich Rubino next on Overnight America, KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals. Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome back to Overnight America. Our friend Rich Rubino, we talked to him on Mondays, but in this case, it's right after the debate that was on CNN tonight. Six Democratic presidential candidates on stage. There are more candidates that are still declared that were not on the stage, but still, these were the ones that qualify for this one. Hey, Rich, thank you for sticking around.
Oh, you're welcome.
Just real quick, I was reading this, and it seems like the news just broke not that long ago. I saw Fox News posted up, too. Now, Michael Avenatti still has family here in St. Louis. He has ties here. And some people during this campaign trail said he was going to be the one that should be running for president because he was going to be the one to take down Donald Trump.
Yes. I
just want to report this because I just saw this now. Attorney Michael Avenatti arrested by the IRS during a disciplinary hearing in Los Angeles today. So,
wow.
Ooh, not looking too good for him. Now, he was on those
talk
shows.
He probably won't get the nomination, then. That's what you're saying?
Well, it's almost like Dumb and Dumber, so you're saying there's a chance. You don't know.
Yes, yes.
You don't know yet. But the thing with that during the summer and, you know, all of the publicity, and he was on the networks. He was on CNN like twice a day. So he was getting a lot of publicity. And part of that was the people like the Bill Maher's of the world and the commentators, they were all egging him on saying, oh, boy, I really like this guy. He should run for president. So what a fall tonight. We have the candidates on stage and Michael Avenatti in handcuffs. So I just wanted to mention that real quick.
Yeah, and the same day that that Alex Cora was fired by the Red Sox 2 years, 1 year after winning the World Series. So
all these things going down. So the debate tonight, you had Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, and Tom Steyer all on stage. And I'm curious for you, if we're looking at someone that would have the most likely chance of dropping out next, who do you think it would be?
I don't think any of those candidates are going to drop out. Cory Booker, the last one to drop out. Amy Klobuchar has staked her candidacy on Iowa. If she doesn't come in on the top, say the top four in Iowa, then she probably will drop out. But, you know, she's basically gone to all, she's going to all nine counties, courting all the constituencies in Iowa that no one else is going after. So she's going to stay in. Obviously, Warren and Sanders and Biden are going to stay in. Steyer, just because based on the money that he spent, you know, he's got a long-term ground game, and he's, I think, wants to at least get into Nevada where he's actually doing better than he is doing in places like Iowa. So he's going to basically stay in. And the other candidate, Michael Bennett, the senator from Colorado, is the one many people are saying, you know, why is he still in the race? But it's interesting. You know, he's going town hall to town hall, house party to house party all over New Hampshire. And James Carville, the raging Cajun who, you know, orchestrated Bill Clinton's 1992 campaign, the comeback kid, he endorsed him yesterday, believe it or not, out of nowhere. And so it's interesting. He's somebody who I think most people would say, well, when's he going to drop out? When's he going to drop out? I think he's probably going to go all the way to New Hampshire. So my guess is that basically what you're going to see is going to be the exact same candidates are going to be in the race. Also, Pete Buttigieg, he has an advantage right now. You know, he does not have a day job anymore. He's now the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. His second term expired. And with all the other candidates at least the senatorial candidates being held back in Washington to actually do their day job in terms of the impeachment hearings for Donald Trump, he's going to have a free run him and Joe Biden, I guess, as well, and Tom Steyer in Iowa, and that can potentially benefit them. So I think Cory Booker was the last one to drop out that we're going to see at least till after Iowa.
All right, let me make sure I got all of this. So Warren, Sanders, Biden, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, Steyer, Bloomberg, Bennett, Yang. Is there anyone else that would be considered there, or is that all
there
of them?
There are, you know, if you want to get technical about it, in order to get on the ballot in New Hampshire, all you have to do really is give $1,000 and essentially write a check for $1,000 and go down to the Secretary of State's office and you get your name on the ballot. So technically, there's really about 250 people running. I could run down all the line. What the media usually does is they usually kind of separate the people that are major, that are the major candidates, and there's always kind of a borderline, you know, is this person major, is this person minor? So of the major candidates, those are the ones that are still in the race. The other one would be John Delaney, who was in the first couple debates, a former congressman from Maryland, who also does not have a day job. He's polling at about 1%, 0%, 1%. But, you know, he's actually been in this race since before the midterm election. So he hasn't really seen any electoral traction yet, but he's still in the race as well.
So let's say we're doing a March Madness style tournament, and I'm just going to name two candidates. Who do you think has a better chance of advancing further? And let's put up Amy Klobuchar or Andrew Yang.
I will say Andrew Yang, just because of the fact that Andrew Yang does not have a day job, so he can stay in as long as possible. Amy Klobuchar does, and the fact of the matter is that if she does not fare well after Iowa, and it appears that her funds are dissipating, and it appears that it's a lost effort, it could hurt her in Minnesota for her future Senate runs. Because obviously a Republican candidate will come and run and say, you know, you're spending all this time for this quixotic presidential campaign. She would want to get out of the campaign. She would want to get out of the campaign probably as quickly as possible and try to tend to her, you know, home base. So I would say Andrew Yang.
Tom Steyer or Michael Bennett?
Right now, I would say Tom Steyer probably, just because I think he's going to go probably the distance, because he's hired a lot of staff, he's spending a lot of money, he's not focusing, he doesn't have a day job, so he can spend all his money doing this, and I think he would want to, you know, see it to at least through Super Tuesday.
Marianne Williamson gets back into the race, or Michael Avenatti?
Marianne Williamson gets it back in the race as a write-in candidate. There is precedent for that, by the way. Gary Hart, back in 1988, he dropped out of the race, then he got it, then he got back in, then he got back into the race later on. Ross Perot did the same thing in 1992. He dropped out when he was ahead. Then he came back in. In 1992, also, Paul Tsongas, he suspended his campaign, never actually dropped out of the race. So technically, there are people that still voted for him after he suspended his campaign. But my guess is that Marianne Williamson will get a few write-in votes because she has a very small constituency, but her constituency, you know, will follow her to the end of the earth.
So if we're doing a running total on money spent, who spends more money of their own, Tom Steyer or Bloomberg?
Oh, Bloomberg by far.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bloomberg is committed to this, not only of his own campaign, but he's committed to beating Donald Trump. He's committed to spending money, whoever the nominee is, and even if it's not him, and he's spending money on House and Senate races as well. Tom Steyer, my guess is, will get out, you know, probably after Super Tuesday. Michael Bloomberg, I think, whether he wins or not, he's just going to probably spend as much money as possible over his main goal, which is to dislodge Donald Trump.
Yeah, I'm looking at CNN right now, and they're showing a commercial for Bloomberg. Did they run any Bloomberg ads during the debate?
No, but you know, that's funny. That's the thought that kept coming to me. I mean, obviously he's not participating in Iowa, but he's waiting for Super Tuesday. But I was thinking, if I were him, that's what I would do, because this is a national audience. I would just blanket the CNN airwaves, like that commercial for Lemu or whatever it is, the guy who has the duck with him, and I would just run about three ads just so that people get the, you know, subliminally who Michael Bloomberg is, and I'm sure that stunt would probably get him some attention as well.
You mean the Emu Lemu?
Yes. Every CNN debate that commercial's been on. I can't even remember what it's for, but I can remember seeing that Emu Lemu thing.
It's for Liberty Mutual Insurance, I believe, yeah.
Well, I got the message, but I guess if I wanted insurance, I don't know if I'd actually be thinking that, because I don't know if I just remember seeing the guy with whatever the other non-human was.
Yeah, that would have been so smart for Bloomberg. Imagine during their breaks, you know how they just have a little box where the commercials are, and it says,
yes,
you know, coming right back with the debate. If he would have just been behind a podium to make it look like it was coverage of the debate, he was just...
Maybe do a live 30 seconds during the debate and talk about... That would have been great. That would have been a great stunt.
Wow. Like they do during the Super Bowl. Some people will do, like, their own halftime show, so you can turn away, watch their thing, and come back. He could have pulled one of those deals.
What if Trump had tried that?
Awesome.
Spent money for a 30-second commercial in the middle of it.
Oh, they wouldn't have taken his money. That would have been the greatest, though. Could you imagine?
Did you see what Sleepy Joe said in the first round of this debate? You know?
He probably has more people reading his Twitter messages than would watch the debate. I mean, he's got a lot
of people. He actually had an alternative rally going on in Wisconsin while the presidential debate was going on.
Oh, man, that would have been a great live cut-in for CNN, wouldn't it? So overall, we have the Democratic debate tonight. Now the eyes are on Iowa. So let's say you're a political consultant. Is there any last bit of advice you'd give to some of the candidates?
Yeah, I mean, I would say for Pete Buttigieg, I would say take advantage of the fact that these other candidates are going to be in the United States Senate. And the other thing I would say is take advantage of the fact and star the fact that you are a municipal official and that you're untainted by Washington. Do the exact same thing that Jimmy Carter did back in 76. He used the fact that he was a one-term governor of Georgia no one ever heard of. He used that to his advantage at a time when people were sick and tired of Washington politicians. Use that to your advantage. Joe Biden, obviously, use it to your advantage and show that you really want this, that you're willing to do all the house parties, you're willing to go, you know, which he's been doing, that he's not taking this for granted like lots of times a front runner will do, and answer as many press questions as possible, because sometimes he can be seen as kind of aloof and kind of, you know, be seen as somewhat above it all. And the other candidates, I would say, for the United States, for the candidates who are actually going to the United States Senate, you know, Elizabeth Warren, Michael Bennett, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, I would say talk about how focused you are on doing your day job and how you took an oath to the Constitution, and that's why you're spending your time, you know, doing that. And in terms of Tom Steyer, I would just say, you know, spend as much money, not so much in Iowa, but certainly spend it on places like Nevada and hope that there's some sort of a split verdict in Iowa, and then there's a split verdict in New Hampshire, and then it goes and people are looking for some sort of an alternative candidate. And I don't know what advice I'd give to John Delaney, because he's been trying to get his name out there and it just is not working. So I would just say, he's focused so much time on Iowa. Stay in and hope that he gets some sort of a wild card there, and somehow he gets 2 or 3%, and try to get as much free media as possible. I would also say for the candidates that aren't in the debates, go to the debates as a spectator, go to the debates and go to the spin room and try to get as many interviews there as possible so you can get as much free airtime as possible there.
Wow.
Where there's many networks, and lots of times What they do, they'll have Radio Row, meaning they'll have all the radio, a lot of radio talk shows. We'll go to some of these debates in the New Hampshire debate, for example. They're going to have Radio Row. Just go around. They're going to have radio stations all around across the country and just literally just go to one station to another station and try to get as much free media so that people still focus, that you're still in the race. They don't think you dropped out and they don't forget who you are.
You're a smart guy, Rich Rubino. You know your stuff. Did you watch West Wing when it was on TV?
Yes, I did.
Of course you did. That would be like the perfect show for you.
Yes, absolutely. I like the idea that I think, what was it at the end? They made the opponent the Secretary of State or something?
Oh, I don't remember. You know, actually, I didn't even watch the show, but I just feel that would be the perfect fit for the things you enjoy.
I didn't watch every episode, but I watched many episodes, and you know, it was pretty much close to reality, specifically showing what the speaker's role is, and you know how. Yeah. How hardball is, and how you're playing with your how you you take the views of the party's leadership versus the views of your constituents, but at the end of the day, it's all about self actualization. It's all about staying in office, and that seems to be what the main motif of that show was, and it's the main motif certainly of Washington as well.
Well, what about House of Cards? Did you watch that one?
That one I didn't watch.
Okay, you skipped that one. That was a little bit more sensational.
I did watch Yo! MTV Raps, though.
MTV Raps?
Yo! MTV Raps, if that counts.
Was that your favorite show in the 90s?
No, but I do remember watching it a few times.
You know, I used
that
to
may
have...
Maybe a non-sequitur.
I remember I bought a pack of baseball cards. Like, they used to make those different cards back in the 90s of just about everything when people were buying those things. And I bought an MTV Yo! Raps card set or whatever. And I thought it was so cool, but I didn't know any of the artists on it, not one.
I do remember. I was a big collector of baseball cards, so.
Yeah?
I used to collect all the ones before World War I, actually.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great collection to have. Do you still have it?
Yeah, I do, actually. Everyone else was looking for the new cards. I was, for some reason, had this proclivity to go to the old cards, so they were overprinting in the 80s and the 90s, so a lot of those cards became worthless, but yeah. The older cards, you know, stayed pretty much where they were, and obviously it was just a different market, but I always had that interest.
Oh, cool. Rich Rubino, if they want to look you up online, it's polita-geek.com, and they can look your book up, American Politics on the Rocks. I'm so glad that we were able to hook up tonight. Thank you for coming on after the Democratic debates.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
And Rich Rubino, we'll talk to him again next Monday. A lot could change between now and next Monday, too. He joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line on Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Rich is a political professor. He is so smart when it comes to politics. So smart. He knows his stuff. I've learned a lot from him and continue to every time we do a show together. If you want to check out some of our other interviews with him, and we just had one last night. We do a regular interview on Mondays. Go to KMOX.com/ONA and you can get it right there. So yeah, that was the news that was starting to break. I just saw it when we were in the break there doing the weather not more than 20 minutes ago. And this is the headline from Fox News. Avenatti arrested by IRS agents during California Bar Association hearing. I shouldn't be laughing. I know he's got family here, but it couldn't have happened to a more deserving person. So let's go through and we'll see what Fox is doing this. And let's see, does CBS have anything up yet? No, I'm looking at the CBS Newswire. I don't think they have anything yet. If they do, I'd prefer to bring that because they might have... No, nothing yet. So this is what's being reported in Los Angeles. Avenatti was arrested by the IRS during a break in a disciplinary hearing over allegations that the high-profile lawyer scammed a client out of $840,000. It happened at 6 p.m., I'm guessing California time, where the State Bar of California has initiated proceedings against him. And here's the quote. I can confirm that he was arrested by federal agents, Avenatti's lawyer said. I anticipate a bail hearing 2 p.m. tomorrow in Santa Ana. I haven't seen the details of the warrant, but should have it later this evening. So, wow. So he's going to be sitting at least tonight in the slammer. Avenatti did not return to the courtroom after the hearing. His attorney called for a sidebar, and there he was, gone. Well, I didn't know you could be in the middle of a court proceeding like that and then they could just arrest you. They wouldn't, like, wait till the end of it. You'd think that it would go towards the end, but I guess they saw enough. So he's the former lawyer of Stormy Daniels, accused of fraud, cheating on his taxes, his own side business, lots of unpaid debts. What else was he charged with? Oh, trying to extort money out of Nike. He had cases going both in New York and Los Angeles. Yikes. And that's the thing. Everyone was looking at him. He was such a tough talker. Oh, I'm going to take down Donald Trump. Oh, I'm going to do this. Oh, I'm going to do that. You know, this is what happens when you get into a scam. They always tough talk and they always puff their chest out. And this is for sure bona fide, great way for you to make unlimited money. There's no way this could go and fold or whatever. It was almost like he was running a pyramid scheme. He was not paying out, but he was taking all this money in, and he thought this ride would last forever. Not so much. I wonder if he has, let's see, Evan Eddie, has he made his Twitter account? No, he hasn't locked it yet. Doesn't matter. Well, he did tweet about 7 hours ago, his last tweet before going to jail. I wonder how that experience is going to treat him. We'll keep an eye on it if there's any details on it. But, man, this is a lesson and a half. The rise and fall of Evan Eddy. He was on every single CNN show, like, every day. I don't know how he conducted any business. That's all he was pure publicity. There's another survey that came out. I'll read this real quick because right after the news, when we get past 11 o'clock, we'll get CBS News. We'll also get Alex Degman in the local news. But Kristen Arnold's going to join us. She's a rules analyst. You can look her up online. And I'm going to ask her how the moderators handled this sort of thing. Now, Rich Rubino said this was a very informative debate. How did the moderators do? Did they bring up the right topics? Did they allow for the right rebuttals? Did they manage the time properly, wisely? We'll just see what she thinks about that. She's had a lot of criticisms for some of the past ones. This one seems like, from what Rich was saying, a good debate altogether, all around, one of your textbook style debates. One quick survey that came out from fastcompany.com. America thinks that tech giant companies are much more likely to do the right thing than Hollywood celebrities. Wow. This is, altogether, there's not a lot of confidence in people in general. So top performing brands include things like Amazon and Google. Well trusted. Don't trust them, man. Don't trust Google. Do not trust them. I'm much more inclined to trust Apple. And I'm not even an Apple guy. I don't have an Apple phone. I don't prefer Apple computers. But in general, there's this one story that's out, and they've done this before. The government will come to Apple and say, hey, can you unlock this phone for us? And they'll say no. They are much more likely to try to protect your privacies than a Google or an Amazon would. Not even close. All right, so here, if you look at this, the share of Americans who say they trust each of the following a lot to do the right thing. So at the top, their primary doctor, 50% say they trust their primary doctor. That's the size it gets. The military's at 44%, then Amazon and Google come in at 39 and 38%. Then if you go all the way down the list, let's just spin the all the way at the bottom is Hollywood at 4%. Here's things that people trust more than Hollywood. Wall Street. The U.S. government. Ooh. News media is at 8%. Yikes. Now that's low. Thanks a lot, CNN. Capitalism's at 14%. Why do people not trust capitalism? Give me a break. A lot of people don't understand the alternatives to that. Religious leaders are only at 15%. Labels on food packaging is at 17%. Health warnings and advisories, 23%. Scientific studies, 26%. Teachers are at 35%. Tom Hanks is at 34%. Why is Tom Hanks on here? Why is Tom Hanks so trustworthy? Tom Hanks is really missing out. Why be an actor when you can just be a brand ambassador for something like Gwyneth Paltrow and just work off that trust and make big dollars off of something like that? I can see why Tom Hanks is pretty trustworthy. Look at the roles he's played. He's Woody in Toy Story, for Pete's sake. How do you not trust a toy like Woody? We're going to hook up with Kristen Arnold coming up. We've had a good time in the past talking to her about these things. Don't go anywhere for it. It's what, 20 minutes from now, not even that. 15 minutes from now. Wow, these times, they are going by quick. And I also want to mention, you can follow me on Twitter, @RyanRecker. If you miss any part of the show, You can download the podcast by going to KMOX.com/ONA. Make it one of your favorite podcasts. Make sure to subscribe. Make sure to leave a nice comment. Make sure to give us a nice rating. 5 stars would be appreciative. I'd be appreciative of that. Appreciative. I don't have my dictionary with me. But also, if you don't have the radio.com app, it's a good way to connect because they can send you reminders of some of the big things that are going on as they're happening. So breaking news alerts locally here in St. Louis. Makes it really easy for you to follow along. We'll be right back on Overnight America. KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.